to forget that the term producer can also mean the following: the profession of somebody who brings together people with different capacities, who combines working resources and working power, work power, in a meaningful way with a view to one single goal. But the small producer tends to refrain from any collective organization of the necessary skills and competencies and not to detect them in himself or develop them in himself. And this is a kind of erosion of the working conditions of the creative industry, which up until a certain degree had promoted the professionalization and specialization of certain manual dexterities and skills. Furthermore, you cannot earn or cover your livelihood by exclusively using the wages which were paid by the broadcasters, because a small producer cannot pay any adequate compensation, and therefore small producers only invite occasional work. Harun says, if you want to work or live off your work, and if you have to live off your work, then you can't engage in this profession. I mean, you can't really expect an awful lot of things which are done, or work which is being done out of pressure, but this conversely does not necessarily mean that a lot of work is being done for sheer proclivity. A pendulum of kind of, this is a kind of pendulum which shatters the dream of the small producer. And then there is a third argument which is geared towards the familiarity of people with whom the small producer cooperates. Harun writes on this, that's what's so sad about the story, that the living work enters the private sphere and the abstract work remains in the social sphere, the history of art and industry. There are hardly any ideologies which are helpful in this regard, and they deny the fact that they make a contribution towards the fetishization of the livelihood and the more comprehensive vitalistic value added within the meaning of a new spirit of capitalism, which owes itself to the interplay of social and economic liberalization of the late 1960s and early 1970s. And at a different point, Harun writes, you attend certain bars because of the drinks and because of the person who kind of buys you a drink. In some bars, it would be better if the drink poured itself. Nothing is worse than the pretense of lively work. The last sentence appears to be valid up until this very day, and it anticipates the current cultural criticism of Slavoj Žižek up until René Polish. And then there is a fourth argument which says, I prefer producing myself in order to be independent. And Harun acknowledged it with a kind of disdainful, but maybe also kind of lost question. What are you supposed to say to that? The allegation of a causal context between small producer tomb and producerdom and independence characterizes the self-reception of the independent culture, not only in film, but also even more in pop music. But out of this construction, various myths are derived from the anti-capitalistic creativity in the day and age of capitalism. But independence is what Harun Farrokhi knew from his own experience, is exactly the opposite of what cultural production makes possible. And quite the opposite, creativity and heteronomy are indivisible. The last quote shows that this heteronomy and collectivity of art is also a matter of the genders. In this case, dependencies and protective offers between men and women who in the fragmented life which exclusively serves subsistence. Now, my final quote. I always wanted to have a creative job. I gave up track and field sports, and I did not approach the girls reading teenage magazines in Berlin. I was living in a basement. In the morning, I went to work for a brewery and drove the truck with beer. Then in the evening, I went to evening school in order to make headway in my life, and in the midnight I went to the Eden Saloon, participated in a prize dance award, and on several occasions I won the title of Mr. Twist. In the early morning I went to the Tempelhofer Airport and was wearing a white overall of the Pan Am, but I could not write, and after three lines I was scared that I would not be possible to hold a grip onto life, and then I went to look for it elsewhere. Then for 7 years a woman protected me and I learned everything. I can do my work, but what I experienced makes no sense, like marriage, phony marriage, phony company. I'm happy to intimate that Haroon later, up until his death, could escape this. I have always depicted again and again the workstation of the author. Yes, it's the author who changes using a collage as a tool, recombining things, putting them into a new context. And these images also say this is what a workstation looks like. This isn't a depiction of an editing station, it's a model. When I filmed this nearly 20 years ago, most people's workplace was still in one of the big factories or office buildings, so that my solitary workplace represented a turn against the factory society. In the meantime, factory society has turned against itself. So I always depicted the workstation of the author. This is what Haroon says at the beginning of this film you just saw, or the trailer. And Farouki quotes an excerpt from Between the Wars of 1978, where he himself is being shown at 20 years younger of age, and he is in the role of the author, and for instance, wood cuttings of Gerd Arndt and other progressive artists of the colonial era of the 1920s and cuts them and reassembles them. The author is no longer necessarily the authentic Haroon Farouki, who has a position in the discourse and author function, as Michel Foucault called it in 1969. Haroon Farouki wanted to deal with a term of authorship which was different from the auteur of the French Politique des Auteurs, although he definitely also sympathized with the Cahiers du Cinéma, definitely. On the other hand, Farouki opens the term of the author by referring him to the workstation, to the workplace, the desk or the editing room or the editing place, and reduces him to the status of a worker, and the editing room becomes the icon for the specific temporality of the immersion in work. As a worker in the editing room, the author discovers himself as being helpless, but he's also fascinated by the fact that he no longer has control over what is working time and what is leisure time. You work outside of regular working hours. Editing is a repetitive work and gives rise to fixed workstations, but every cut is a special effort, and this is something that becomes visible, and this actually puts a spell on the worker. It becomes very difficult to divide working time and lifetime. Time passes very quickly. In the essay, what was an editing room in 1984, and this is what the quote was from, Farouki describes the industrial and potentially lackluster character of an editing room and draws an analogy to the office. He says the editing room are usually in the back offices, in the cellars or attics. An editing room is a very inhospitable location, like little compartments where the masters in the factories or, for instance, people at the construction sites kind of hang out. So it's a kind of criticism of the work of ideas for TV. The work in office, writing of reports and files, structuring and organizing, systematizing and archiving, but also the monotony and the the fixation on authorities of bureaucratic administrative work of which there is no image which has a strong impact on the way. And now permeates by way of analogy from the office to the editing room. In Interface, Farocchi is shown, and it was created in the middle of the 1970s at a point in time where most people were still working in big factories. And this is why the solitary workstation was kind of an anti-industrial bulwark, like something that was turning against the factory society, which ever since had turned against itself. The change of the function of the solitary workstation between the 1970s and 1990s and even up until the very day takes place in simultaneously to changes in the terms of authorship, changes which had many consequences for Farocchi, but also for other workers in the creative industries, and also are expressed in a kind of generalization of the principle of the artist's self-entrepreneurship, the governmentality of the freelancer. This may lead to indicated ecstasies of productions, but it may also lead to a very unheroic dramatization of an unsuitable anomy, where producing no longer has any firm stronghold. Harun wrote in 1978, over the last months, it no longer made any difference whether I was going to work, applying for a job, whether I was shooting or editing, or happened to run into Kurt Jürgens at the breakfast buffet, or attending a wage union discussion between actors and editors, or facilitating a debate here, or whether I was just looking at the ceiling of my room for 24 hours. It was no tragedy. It was just rubbish. So it was very disillusioning, quote unquote. So this was very disillusioning development. And Dietrich already mentioned the wonderful self-reflexive analysis of December 1973, where Harun focuses on the disintegration and restructuring process under the title Comments on the Status of the Small Producer. The heading of this article is also shown in the table of contents of the edition of Filmkritik, Film Criticism, a magazine. And on the page in which the text begins, the editor, or Harun, came up with something special, i.e. you see the letterhead of the production firm Larabelle Film under the Berlin address of the author. This is what the article begins like. There's hardly any word which has led to so many misunderstandings or has to lead to so many misunderstandings like the word producer in the context with a film related to flats and with a wonderful tag on the door. As a kind of pseudo or phony company, everybody can form their own production company, just like any pub owner can call something a pub if they want. But unlike different real producers of goods who have capital in the form of money and production resources, the small producers offer themselves as an author and as a director. Thus, they sell a comprehensive, generalistic subjectivity, an artistic creativity, social talents such as communication capacity, organization capacity, flexibility, and other properties. However, in very modest condition, under very modest conditions, and small producers are entrepreneurs, is what Harun says. The legislator and the tax authorities think that authors are merchants who buy paper cheap and sell it on once it's been written on with a markup. But contrary to those working for large producers in film and TV stations, the small producers do not have a right to union or labor rights. They work as a reserve army, a reserve army officers who are at the forefront, or at the back of whom there is another army of possible reserve lieutenants. The broadcasting stations, public broadcasting stations, had started outsourcing jobs, started from the 1960s or 70s, to small producers who could be offset against each other without any major difficulties. The small producer now suddenly takes on a twofold role. There's an ambivalence in the realignment of the class relations of the neoliberalism, which is indicated here between sole or lone wolf entrepreneurship and collective. The borders increasingly become malleable. In filmmaking, this is what Haroun writes, you also become a producer, and there is a cooperation of many people. The broadcaster itself becomes a producer and is like an employer, and the people who are employed by the broadcaster suddenly become entrepreneurs. The self-entrepreneur, as a sub-entrepreneur, subcontractor, thus is a way of being for those people working in the creative industries, who create certain social textures. Haroun, for instance, saw this if you look at Godard. In order to move away from the individual production and from a flash in the pan and move on to a kind of constant output, Godard had to become a small producer. The daily work should include the special with ease, like the word artisan, the kind of manual worker, involves the word art. But the intertwinement of manual work and intellectual work in small production is encumbered by lots of pitfalls. At the end of the 1973 article, Haroun mentions four possible arguments why he suffices himself with or is satisfied with his status as a cultural worker. And he comments it with acerbic mockery. The first argument, for instance, is the alleged lacking manual dexterity or skill of those people working for TV on a regular basis. But the manual workers don't want to be instructed by the white-collar workers because they know that the white-collar workers only do this for reasons of competition. So here you quite clearly see that he had read Alfred Sohn Redl a couple of years before, who had published studies on the form of goods and thinking and intellectual and physical work, as well as those Marxist theory endeavors were consisted in deriving the division of white-collar and blue-collar workers from the exchange of equivalents, which was brokered by money, and the synthesis of a production society and the commensuration of lively work imagination. The commensuration requires the unity of manual worker and white-collar workers on a pan-social level. A second argument, however, ruins, as far as Haroun is concerned, the professions of film workers. We tend to forget that the term producer can also mean the following: the profession of somebody who brings together people with different capacities, who combines working resources and work power in a meaningful way with a view to one single goal. But the small producer tends to refrain from any collective organization of the necessary skills and competencies and not to detect them in himself or develop them in himself. And this is a kind of erosion of the working conditions of the creative industry, which up until a certain degree had promoted the professionalization and specialization of certain manual dexterities and skills. Furthermore, you cannot earn or cover your livelihood by exclusively using the wages which were paid by the broadcasters, because a small producer cannot pay any adequate compensation, and therefore small producers only invite occasional work. Haroun says, if you want to work or live off your work, and if you have to live off your work, then you can't engage in this profession. I mean, you can't really expect an awful lot of things which are done or work which is being done out of pressure, but this conversely does not necessarily mean that a lot of work is being done for sheer proclivity. A pendulum of kind of, this is a kind of pendulum which shatters the dream of the small producer. And then there is a third argument which is geared towards the familiarity of people with whom the small producer cooperates. Haroun writes on this, that's what's so sad about the story, that the living work enters the private sphere and the abstract work remains in the social sphere, the history of art and industry. There are hardly any ideologies which are helpful in this regard, and they deny the fact that they make a contribution towards the fetishization of the livelihood and the more comprehensive vitalistic value added within the meaning of a new spirit of capitalism, which owes itself to the interplay of social and economic liberalization of the late 1960s and early 1970s. And at a different point, Harun writes, you attend certain bars because of the drinks and because of the person who kind of buys you a drink. In some bars, it would be better if the drink poured itself. Nothing is worse than the pretense of lively work. The last sentence appears to be valid up until this very day, and it anticipates the current cultural criticism of Slavoj Žižek up until René Polish. And then there is a fourth argument which says, I prefer producing myself in order to be independent. And Harun acknowledged it with a kind of disdainful, but maybe also kind of lost question. What are you supposed to say to that? The allegation of a causal context between small producer-tum and producer-dom and independence characterizes the self-reception of the independent culture, not only in film, but also even more in pop music. But out of this construction, various myths are derived from the anti-capitalistic creativity in the day and age of capitalism. But independence is what Harun Farrokhi knew from his own experience, is exactly the opposite of what cultural production makes possible. And quite the opposite, creativity and heteronomy are indivisible. The last quote shows that this heteronomy and collectivity of art is also a matter of the genders. In this case, dependencies and protective offers between men and women who in the fragmented life which exclusively serves subsistence. Now, my final quote. I always wanted to have a creative job. I gave up track and field sports, and I did not approach the girls reading teenage magazines in Berlin. I was living in a basement. In the morning, I went to work for a brewery and drove the truck with beer. Then in the evening, I went to evening school in order to make headway in my life. And in the midnight, I went to the Eden Saloon, participated in a prize dance award, and on several occasions, I won the title of Mr. Twist. In the early morning, I went to the Tempelhofer Airport and was wearing a white overall of the Pan Am, but I could not write. And after three lines, I was scared that I would not be possible to hold a grip onto life. And then I went to look for it elsewhere. Then for 7 years, a woman protected me, and I learned everything. I can do my work, but what I experience makes no sense, like marriage, phony marriage, phony company. I'm happy to intimate that Harun later up until his death could escape this.